What's up, another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Vincel, also known as Ricky Verandas, and a great story for you today. I'm also going to help you out with your quarantine because I'm going to give you some stuff to watch during these quarantine times, something to read possibly. We're talking today about this film called Dark Waters, which has a great cast, Mark Ruffalo, Anna Hathaway, Tim Robbins. It's based on a true story. You can rent it on Amazon and plenty of other places. It's also inspired by a book called The Lawyer Who Became DuPont's Worst Nightmare. There's also a documentary, if you like documentaries, called The Devil We Know, which I believe is on Netflix, but you can definitely find online. And it's all about the same story that I'm referring to. And there's a book called Exposed. And all this stuff is about this attorney who basically became DuPont's worst nightmare. And his whole story, Mark Ruffalo plays this attorney who is with me today, Robert Bilott. And it's an amazing story. I really admire people like Robert who are willing to fight huge corporations like this and do what he does. So I'm a huge fan of what he's doing and his story. And if you guys are looking for something to watch while you're stuck at home, definitely check out Dark Waters. It's one of those films that even if it wasn't based on true events or a true story, it would still be a great film with a great cast. So definitely check it out. And the documentary is also very good if you want to check it out, The Devil We Know. And his book, if you're into reading, maybe you are, it's called Exposed. And I'll put all those links in the show description so you can check it out. But I won't tell you too much about the story because we talk about it obviously on the show and he does a much better job of sharing his story. So hopefully you guys enjoy this, but it's a very important show in regards to chemicals that are in everything around us that could be causing some serious health effects. So this is a super important show and super important information to get out there. With that said, in the show description, I always put links to the guests' social media sites, their website, whatever it may be. And I also put links to my Patreon page if you want to support the show. But like I'm saying, these discussions are important. And I always tell you guys, if you can rate the show, review the show, share the show, that is super helpful. So please do that. Get these discussions out there as much as you can. Post it anywhere you want. It's all open source. And if you guys want to support the show or can support the show financially, please do. Everybody who has, I've gotten quite a few new Patreon supporters from the bottom of my heart. I truly, truly appreciate it because I know how uncertain the future is from day to day. If somebody's listening to this show a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we're talking about the COVID-19 crisis and quarantine that we're all living through at the moment. And all the people who are supporting the show financially, even if it's just a dollar, I truly appreciate it. I know that some people aren't working. Some people don't know when they're going to go back to work. Some people don't know if the quarantine is going to get worse or better, whatever it may be. So all the uncertainty, I know, makes it hard for anybody to even donate a dollar. So from the bottom of my heart, I truly, truly appreciate it. Everybody who is, also all the people who've been contacting me during all this, just sending me articles, links, giving me just updates on what's going on in their neck of the woods. I truly, truly appreciate it. It's awesome to hear from fans from all over the world. That's the beautiful thing about the internet, and the power of the internet is that we can connect with people everywhere and anywhere. And so much information is being suppressed. So as of right now, subscribing to podcasts like this one on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, any phone app that you use for a podcast is the best way of getting this information, because YouTube, Google, all this stuff is being suppressed. I'm constantly seeing articles that I'm sharing on my social media accounts being flagged, or people saying that they're clicking on it and they're getting this little piece of information saying that it's not factual or whatever it may be. And I'm looking at these stories. I'm like, how can this not be factual? Or how can they have fact checked this article? So it's important to be able to have these platforms where we can have these open and free discussions without any agendas being pushed, without any sponsors trying to sway things one way or another. So I think these podcasts are super important. So not just my podcast, any other podcast you're listening to or anybody else's work that you truly appreciate. If you can, share the stuff. If you can support them financially, great. But if you can't, then at least share the stuff. I mean, people are helping out and supporting shows that they appreciate, and I think that's awesome. But like I said, and I'll keep saying it, share the stuff. Super important to share this stuff, even if it's just sending a link to your friends, families, anybody that you think might find these conversations important. Thanks again, guys. I truly appreciate your time. Hopefully everybody is well and dealing with this as best as they can. And I love all of you, and I'll see you on the next one.
Yeah, I'm an attorney at the law firm of Taft, Tinius & Hollister in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Northern Kentucky. I've been there now, this will be 30 years. I graduated law school in 1990. My dad was in the Air Force. We moved around a lot, but we spent a lot of time in Parkersburg, West Virginia, where my mom's family was from and where she grew up. And even though being in the military, you know, we moved around from time to time. We'd spend a lot of time in Parkersburg for family holidays and events. Kind of really viewed that as my hometown. And that's kind of how I got involved in the issues involving forever chemicals, and PFAS and PFOA. Was a gentleman from that community called me one day in October of 1998. Asking if I could help him out with cows dying on his farm. And that really kind of launched this whole investigation that has now lasted almost 22 years.
Yeah, and your firm, you actually worked with chemical companies often, right?
Yeah, our firm, when I joined back in 1990, we were doing a lot of work helping our clients, which at the time included a lot of large chemical companies, a lot of big companies, corporations, helping them comply with all the different federal environmental laws and regulations. And a lot of what we were doing back then was work under the Superfund statute, which was the federal laws dealing with cleaning up hazardous waste sites across the country. So we spent a lot of time with the chemical companies. I actually worked at several sites with DuPont's attorneys, who we ended up being in litigation with later on, but over these forever chemicals. But yeah, we spent a lot of time, particularly the first 8 years or so of my practice, really learning all these different federal and state environmental laws and helping our primarily corporate clients trying to comply with that pretty complex system.
No, I lost you for a second. You still there?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, so, yeah, because the FDA, obviously, the whole system is very complex. And we assume that because there's an FDA, because there's government oversight that's kind of looking over this and kind of seeing what these chemical companies are doing, that everything we consume is safe and anything that's put on the market is safe. But obviously that's not the case. And when you had, it was the farmer was a friend of the family's, right? And he's the one who came to you and said that something was happening to his animals on the farm. And was he also having some type of health issues?
He was. This was a gentleman who was raising cattle on property outside of Parkersburg, and one of his neighbors happened to be good friends with my grandmother. And that neighbor had been talking on the phone one day with my grandmother. And it was later that same day that this farmer, Wilbur Tennant, was complaining how he couldn't get anybody to help him with this problem he was having on his property, that the neighbor was able to pass along my name through my grandmother. So it was, it was an interesting connection there. But, you know, these are, like you say, incredibly complex laws governing the chemical industry, primarily controlled by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was having, come to find out that there was something going on with the, because the stuff that was getting into the water, was that stuff that, I mean, was it okay for them to throw this stuff in the water? Was it something that was completely approved and people weren't aware of? Or was it something that they were hiding from the EPA and other and the public in regards to what was put in the water? For people who are listening who maybe haven't seen the film yet, like what was going on with the water? What was going there, and how easily could have they taken a more environmentally friendly, I guess, way of disposing of this stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, I get this call in October of 98 from this gentleman who identifies himself as Wilbur Tennant. He's raising cows on this property out in Parkersburg, and what he's telling me is he is watching white foaming water coming out of a landfill owned by the DuPont Company, and the cattle are drinking this white foaming water. They are developing tumors. Their teeth are turning black. They're dropping dead. They're wasting away other animals in the area. Deer, fish, birds also are getting sick and dying. And he himself believes he's got health issues related to being exposed to this water and the vapors coming off the landfill. He's having difficulty breathing. He's coughing. His family, he's concerned about them as well. So, you know, he has no idea what is in this water other than he can see, you know, white foam. He can see what's happening to the animals. He's been videotaping it because the state and federal regulators really aren't helping him out. The company isn't really helping him. People in town don't really want to talk to him because this is such a huge employer in the area. So he has no idea, you know, what this chemical, what this material in this white foam is when he reaches out to us. And since, you know, this is the kind of work I had been doing for our corporate clients, our chemical company clients, helping them get permits for landfills, helping them figure out, you know, what are the laws and regulations that govern how you operate a landfill. I thought this might be something we could help Mr. Tennant on. I could pull the permits for this landfill. I could figure out what kind of chemicals are allowed to be there. What are their permit limits? You know, is something being emitted above the permit? Yet when we took that case on, it ended up being a lot more complicated, because what we found out was the chemicals that were causing this foam that were leaking out of this landfill were completely unregulated. They were chemicals that had come out right after World War II, decades before the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency even came into existence. You know, that the EPA wasn't even formed until 1970. And some of the first federal laws regulating new chemicals coming out in the environment didn't come out until 1976. And they focused primarily on new chemicals coming out after 76. So, you know, what we discovered was we were dealing with contamination that was being caused by a chemical that was essentially completely unregulated. And not only did the regulators not know, you know, really anything about this chemical, the public also didn't know anything about it. Nobody knew what this stuff was or what its impacts would be to the people who were being exposed to it.
Yeah, years ago I had a guest on. He was actually also an attorney, Alan Bell. He actually wrote a book called Poison, How a Crime-Busting Prosecutor Turned His Medical Mystery into a Crusade for Environmental Victims. It's a little bit of a long title, but it's he had an interesting kind of medical mystery, too, and, you know, had all these health issues, couldn't figure out what was going on. They had to completely, like, remove him from, like, any civilization, and they put him, like, basically in, like, a bubble in the woods, and come to find out it was, like, his a reaction he was getting to all these chemicals in this new, like, office building. And so there's just, like, so many cases that you hear about where there's these mysteries, these medical mysteries, where people just, like, are sick, or they don't feel good, or they have some unusual symptoms. And one thing we never think about, we always think about diet and health. I talk a lot about diet and health on the podcast, but one thing we kind of neglect sometimes is just the chemicals that are in our drinking water, the chemicals that are in the clothes we wear, in the furniture, in the paint. If you live in an older house, who knows what type of chemicals you might have that were unregulated at the time. I think that's something that kind of gets overlooked at times. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people, particularly in the United States, just assume, you know, when they turn that kitchen faucet on, that the water is perfectly safe, that somebody has been doing whatever needs to be done to check it out and make sure that there are no harmful chemicals. You know, after all, this is the United States. This is the year 2020. And I think what is particularly disturbing is when people realize how little has actually been done in that regard. You know, there are relatively few chemicals that are actually regulated in our country. And you've got tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of chemicals that are out there that either came out before a lot of these regulations were put into place or simply haven't been adequately tested or studied to have any sort of health standards or guidelines out there. So, you know, to hear that your water meets all state and federal standards and guidelines, I think most people assume that means you've looked for everything and it's everything is fine and your water is perfectly fine. Not necessarily. What that means is only the relatively few compounds have been tested for, and maybe your water is okay as far as those couple of compounds are concerned. But unfortunately, there's this larger universe of unregulated materials. And, you know, what you see in the film Dark Waters, and what I try to explore in more detail in my book, Exposure, you know, with this one chemical, PFOA, and this related family of chemicals that we now call PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkylated substances, which is a real mouthful. But it's this whole family of completely man-made materials with carbon and fluorine combined that PFOA is a part of. You know, most of these chemicals have been out there for decades. We've all been exposed to them. We're finding them in drinking water all over the United States, all over the planet. They're showing up in the blood of virtually every living thing on the planet. Babies are being born with these chemicals in our blood. And we're being told, well, we simply don't have enough science and studies yet to tell us exactly what they're going to do to us. I mean, that's kind of a scary concept to know that these exposures have been going on for decades, all across our country, all across the world. Virtually every living thing on the planet is contaminated. Yet we're being told by the companies that make these chemicals and have been pumping them out there for decades, well, you can't prove, you, the people who are exposed, you can't prove what harm they're causing you yet, so we're going to just keep on pumping them out. That's really sort of a, I think, a mind-blowing concept when people realize what really happens with the way chemicals are regulated here in the United States.
Yeah, so the chemicals that were eventually found in the water that eventually was killing his farm animals and whatnot, those were unregulated chemicals, right? Those were, and when you use the term forever chemicals, for people who might not know, could you expand on like what is a forever chemical and why it's called a forever chemical?
Sure. Yeah. We found out eventually when we started digging into documents from the DuPont company, the owner of the landfill that was discharging this white foam into Mr. Tennant's creek. What we found out was this unregulated chemical called PFOA was in the water that the cows were drinking. And then unfortunately, we found out it wasn't just on that property. It was not just Mr. Tennant and his cows and his family that were being exposed, but this chemical had also been discharged into the Ohio River. It had been pumped out of the stacks into the air from a manufacturing plant right down the river owned by DuPont, or the world's largest Teflon manufacturing facility, that this chemical had been used in making Teflon for decades, since the 1940s, and been pumped out into the environment since the early 1950s, essentially completely unregulated. By being pumped into the river, being pumped into the air, being dumped into unlined pits and landfills like the landfill next to Mr. Tennant's property, this chemical had managed to find its way into the entire surrounding community's drinking water supply. So, yeah, we realized this was an issue that went far beyond Mr. Tennant and his family. It was impacting the entire community. And then we realized it wasn't just in the drinking water of that community. This chemical had been used in a variety of different products all across the country, all across the world. Things like stain-resistant clothing and carpeting, fast food wrappers and packaging, firefighting foams, and was likely in drinking water all over the world and was being found in the blood of humans all over the planet. So this contamination had been going on for decades, virtually unnoticed by any of us. Nobody really was aware we were being exposed to these chemicals. The government agencies weren't even aware these chemicals were out there and the harms they were causing. Unfortunately, the companies were well aware. But because they were essentially unregulated, it went essentially unnoticed for decades and decades. And it wasn't until Mr. Tenet came to me in 98 and we started digging into this and started seeing these documents that we were finally able to bring this information out to the government, to the public, and people are only just now really starting to realize the scope of the contamination that's been occurring for some 60 years now.
Yeah, so a lot of these chemicals that are considered forever chemicals, they're basically in your system forever, right?
Yeah, that's the disturbing thing. Well, these particular class of chemicals, these PFAS chemicals, which PFOA is one of, this Teflon chemical, they have this very unique carbon-fluorine bond where carbons attached to fluorine that make them extremely difficult to break apart. So once these chemicals are emitted out into the environment, they don't break down under natural conditions. They don't degrade. So that's why you hear them referred to as forever chemicals, because once they're out there in the environment, in our water, in our soil, in living, you know, wildlife, they're there virtually forever until they're physically removed. And not only do they get out and stay in the environment virtually forever, millions of years, they get into living things and stay in the blood and circulate throughout our bodies and build up to higher and higher levels over time. So they're persistent, they're bioaccumulative, and what we also now know is they're toxic. They can cause cancer, particularly PFOA. So that's the particularly disturbing aspect of these chemicals, is their ability to get out in the environment, stay there virtually forever. In fact, we even had a DuPont scientist at one point characterize these chemicals as essentially going to last millions of years, you know, to the extent that they could be here after humans are off the planet.
Wow. So how much, because you see it over and over again, I know with like pharmaceutical companies, there's no specific law that requires them to share any studies that show that their drug that they're working on or developing is harmful. You know, they don't have to show all their studies. In regards to this stuff, was there studies that were happening that they knew this stuff was harmful, and was it being suppressed to the public?
Unfortunately, yes. What we found when I started digging through all the internal documents from DuPont, and we had to go to court and get court orders to force these documents to be turned over. When I started digging through all these documents, what we saw were studies going back decades, back into the 1950s and 60s. And they started with laboratory animal studies, rats, dogs, guinea pigs, rabbits, monkeys. And they found all kinds of toxic effects by the 1960s. And they even did cancer studies and, in fact, had confirmed that PFOA could cause cancer in rats by the 1980s. And they also were studying their workers who were exposed to these chemicals and were tracking increased cancer rates and liver problems and other issues among the workers and birth defects. And there were all kinds of internal studies like this. And unfortunately, this information was not shared with the government agencies or with the public. A lot of it was actively suppressed. And, you know, under our EPA's rules, you know, I mentioned some of the first federal laws came out in the 70s dealing with new chemicals coming out in the environment. As far as chemicals like this that were already out there, had been out there since the 50s, the companies were told they had an obligation to tell the U.S. EPA if the companies acquired information suggesting there was a substantial risk to human health or the environment from the chemical. And despite everything we were seeing in these internal studies, you know, decades of studies showing all kinds of harmful effects, the company was repeatedly making the decision that they did not believe it presented substantial enough risk to report it to the EPA. So this went on for decades. And eventually, when we finally started sending these studies to the EPA, when I found them and viewed them as, frankly, representing a massive public health threat and started sending them to the EPA ended up suing DuPont in 2004 for having withheld information about this chemical and saying, if this information had been given to us decades ago, we might have been able to start regulating this chemical many, many years ago. So it was unfortunately actively withheld.
Yeah, and in the film, I think, I don't know if it was in the film or during an interview, I know Mark, who played you, he talked about the system is rigged. And you see things like, you know, with Monsanto, they had the Monsanto Protection Act that was signed by Obama that basically protected them from a whole bunch of liability issues. Do you see some of that happening where there's a relationship between the, you know, the EPA, government, and these big chemical companies where they could be doing more, and in many cases they actually help them in covering up some of this stuff?
Well, yeah, that's one of the aspects I really wanted to dig into and explore and explain in more detail. In my book, Exposure, I really tried to explain what was going on there. There was a very close relationship between EPA and DuPont, and really tried to explain, you know, the different dynamics there. You know, you had the company essentially helping draft and dictate public statements to be made about this chemical by the EPA. You know, DuPont helping dictate what would be said to the public about the chemical. Unfortunately, you know, a fairly close relationship. And, you know, you not only have this dynamic occurring with the regulatory agencies, and again, these are other issues I try to really get into more detail in the book on, but you've got, you know, all kinds of dynamics with, for example, the way science is generated in the way it's published, who controls the scientific journals, how does information get published, what is kept out as, quote, junk science, you know, if it contradicts what the prevailing view is on certain things, you know, how information is made available to the public through the media, you know, how information is suppressed. So there are, you know, this issue with PFOA, you know, you step back and you say, how could something like this happen? How can you have a chemical that's this toxic, this persistent, this much of a clear threat to the public? How can you have it in drinking water, in everyone's blood for decades and decades in the United States, in modern times, you know, during our lifetimes? How does something like this happen? And, you know, that's what I really try to get into with the book is, you know, it's not just a problem with the regulatory system. It's the way our legal system works. Who has the burden of proof? It's the way our science is generated. It's the way information's presented through the media. It's the way the political system works. All of those different factors combined generate, you know, what ends up being essentially the perfect storm of contamination and exposure that we see with PFOA and PFAS chemicals.
Yeah, that's the thing about science is that people believe that if it was peer-reviewed, published study, then it must be 100% accurate. There must be no gray area. It's black and white, but it's not. Like you said, there's so much. There's a lot of interest in getting things published, and I mean, you see it over and over again where scientists will put together like a fake study or something, you know, a study that what was it? It was like a study on how chocolate, you could lose weight eating chocolate, and he made up like this fake name and all this stuff, and then he got it published, and then he revealed that he was just kind of proving a point how easy it is to get a outcome and to kind of manipulate the study to get the outcome you want, to get something published, to get that kind of clickbait headline. that, you know, you can lose weight or get healthier eating chocolate. People who eat chocolate are healthier or lose weight. It was something along those lines. And I know, like the French scientist, Dr. Cirillini, he had like a pesticide study, and I think it was GMOs. I can't talk today. GMOs and pesticides study on it, basically how it affected mice. And then, you know, it was peer reviewed and published, and all of a sudden he got some pushback and they pulled it for kind of ridiculous reasons. And I think eventually he got it republished, but nobody really looked into it or really covered the story when it was republished. They only covered it when they said that it wasn't, because it was one of the more popular studies in regards to the health issues that pesticides could lead to. And then the study was pulled, it got headlines. And then when it was republished, I think he ended up fighting it and proving that why they pulled it wasn't really justified. So like stuff like that happens all the time and people just aren't aware of it. But another thing that was really interesting about your story was how the company was, because this is another thing that people might not be aware of, is how often these chemical companies have like spin-off companies. And I know that during this whole case, like DuPont was selling their assets to another or getting rid of their assets or whatever they were doing with another company to kind of prevent, I guess, losing too much money.
Yeah. What you see is by the time we finally start getting trials, public trials, where DuPont is going to be actually taken to trial in front of a jury, and all of the evidence, all of these internal studies about what the company knew or how long they knew it and the devastating impact, you know, that this chemical had on communities, particularly along the Ohio River Valley outside their plant. When all of that was finally starting to happen, and when this information was finally starting to sort of come home on DuPont, started implementing a plan to essentially get rid of that entire business line. You know, DuPont had invented Teflon. And so it was about the time these cases started going to trial, DuPont essentially spun off the entire Teflon business into a completely separate new company called Chemours. Then immediately announced it was going to merge with Dow Chemical, forming a new company, Dow DuPont, which would then break into three new companies. just this sort of corporate shell game, so that when the jury verdicts finally came out, holding the company responsible for having caused cancer to folks in the area along the Ohio River who drank this chemical for years, what you heard in the press was, oh, that wasn't us, that wasn't DuPont, that was some other company. So it's rather remarkable. And unfortunately, this is something we've seen happen with other companies as well.
Yeah, so because we're talking about drinking water, you know, some other issues that people have talked about and discussed with drinking water is obviously fluoride and fracking, you know, all the chemicals that go into the whole fracking process that aren't regulated or kind of unknown. What's your opinions on both those things? Have you looked into either or?
You know, I really have not. I've really not been involved with any of the fracking or, you know, fluoridation of water issues. It actually is sort of an interesting side story, though, when you talk about fluoride in the water. You know, that's actually how we first found out that this chemical PFOA and the PFAS chemicals were getting into human blood. It was back in the 70s, you know, when communities were starting to put fluoride in the water. There were some researchers who wanted to see whether or not that type of fluoride, which is inorganic fluoride, whether any of that was getting into the blood of people whose water was being fluoridated. So they went out and actually collected blood samples from blood banks across the United States. This is back in like 1975, 1976. And sure enough, they found some of that type of fluoride, but what they also found was organic fluoride in the blood. And the researchers at that time said, you know, they really weren't aware of any sort of natural source of organic fluoride. And the only the only type of substance they could think of that might be causing that would be these perfluorochemicals being made by the 3M company. And that, you know, 3M saw that data and immediately started going out and started collecting blood samples from its workers and realized this stuff was getting in their worker blood, and then notified DuPont, and DuPont started sampling its workers. And so by the late 70s, 3M and DuPont both were well aware that these chemicals were getting into human blood. Unfortunately, the rest of us, you know, weren't notified. But that's, you know, it really kind of, that information was developed in connection with people really looking at the fluoridation issue.
Yeah, yeah. And did they come to a conclusion with the fluoride? So that it was getting into our system, the...
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where they ended up with the research on the fluoride, you know, from putting fluoride in water. I was really focusing on that research in terms of what it told us about PFAS chemicals.
Now, after obviously uncovering all this, how did it affect your everyday life? Because I think, like, when you learn, like I said in the beginning of our conversation, like, my wife, I've been telling her for years, like, get rid of the nonstick pans. And she usually doesn't use them. But every once in a while, she's in a rush. She grabs one and she puts it on the stove. And if I walk in, I'm like, what are you doing? Get rid of that. But it's almost like she didn't take it that seriously until she saw the film. And then she's like, you know what? Like, even using these once in a while isn't a good thing. Let me get rid of them. How did uncovering all this stuff affect maybe your everyday life? Did it affect, like, products you used, or did you, you know, what you purchased and stuff you had in your house? Like, did it have any personal effect on you and your lifestyle?
Well, it certainly made me a lot more aware of, you know, labeling and trying to really make sure we understand exactly what we do know about what's in products and what we don't know about what's in products. You know, the labeling can be somewhat misleading at times. For example, you may see, you know, commercials or ads even now that advertise, for example, nonstick cookwares being PFOA free. You know, sort of suggesting that it doesn't have any of these chemicals. The problem is, as all this information finally started coming out about PFOA and the government agencies finally started cracking down and issuing guidelines and standards and really, you know, publicizing the concerns about PFOA, companies started phasing out PFOA, but they switched to other closely related PFAS chemicals. So, you know, seeing a label that says PFOA free doesn't necessarily mean it's PFAS free. So you just have to be extremely careful, you know, in understanding, you know, what is known and what isn't known, frankly, about what's in products. And it's not just cookware. You know, as I indicated before, you know, these chemicals, the PFAS family, have been used in a dizzying array of different consumer products over the years. And unfortunately, a lot of the information about what products use these chemicals, or, you know, what products had manufacturing processes where these chemicals were used, a lot of that simply was never available to the public. You know, a lot of that was confidential business information or wasn't necessarily even known by some of the companies that were making certain products, you know, that these chemicals were in there. So only now, you know, you've got efforts underway. There are a lot of community groups, environmental groups, you know, consumer safety groups out there that are really trying to help you know, bring awareness to where were these products or chemicals used in the past, you know, what companies are switching away from them. So if you want to make a choice or at least try to avoid exposure, you know, can you by switching away to certain products over others? So that information is only sort of just now starting to seep out to the public. And, you know, that's, I think it's critically important for people to have access to that information so they can begin to make choices for themselves about whether they continue to be exposed to any of this or not. Yeah, up to now, none of us had that choice. We didn't even know these exposures were happening. We didn't know, you know, whether these products had them or not. So hopefully, you know, people can start getting this information to at least be in a position to make that choice for themselves.
So how many chemicals that you looked into are still being used worldwide, or have some of them been removed, like you said, on some pans and stuff like that? You see that they're marketing that it's not in the pan material or whatnot. But I mean, is this stuff still widely used? Is it still something that, you know, worldwide is common?
Well, you know, the specific chemical that is featured in the movie Dark Waters and in the documentary The Devil We Know, in the book Exposure, that chemical PFOA, that's the one that there's been probably the most study and the most information made available to the public on it. And as that information has finally come out, you know, it's taken several decades to get that information out to the regulators and the scientific community and the public. That chemical is slowly being phased out. You know, there was a voluntary phase out in the United States. In other parts of the world, it's being affirmatively banned or restricted. A related chemical used in firefighting foam and Scotchgard called PFOS. Also, you know, there are efforts underway to start banning and restricting that. But unfortunately, PFOA and PFOS are just two of the chemicals in this bigger PFAS family I mentioned. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of chemicals in the PFAS family. And that family of chemicals continues to be widely used across the world. And as some of these chemicals start to get phased out, like PFOA and PFOS, unfortunately, you know, folks are switching to, you know, replacement chemicals from within the same family. And so you have scientists and regulators all over the world that are raising red flags saying, hey, you know, let's not just move from one to another one that might be just as bad. You know, let's look at this entire family of chemicals. Let's look at the entire PFAS family and try to set appropriate guidelines and standards for the whole class of chemicals, so that we don't just do this, but it's kind of become a whack-a-mole game where we look at one chemical, we take 20 years, you know, to finally get to the point of starting to take action on one chemical. The companies simply tweak it a bit. For example, PFOA has 8 carbons attached to fluorine, which they call a C8. They've replaced it with something that's simply a C6, 2 fewer carbons, but it's still in the PFAS family. So, you know, the concern is we don't want to simply move from one, tweak it a little bit, call it something new, and end up with a similar problem 20 years down the road from now. So that's really what the scientists and regulators are focusing on worldwide, is how do we address this entire family of chemicals in a coherent, sensible, scientific, comprehensive way.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that basically when a new chemical comes out, or they're using a new chemical, they don't have to prove for it to be safe before using?
It depends on where you are. excuse me. In the United States, you know, the laws have been beefed up. Actually, the federal law governing new chemicals coming out into the market was beefed up in 2016, and actually the PFOA story was used as sort of one of the poster child examples of why that needed to be beefed up. So the laws were beefed up a bit, but generally speaking, I'm kind of oversimplifying here, but in the U.S., you still have the system where a chemical comes out onto the market, and the people who are exposed, they're the ones who have the burden to come forward under our legal system and prove that it's actually causing them some sort of harm. The companies, you know, have some minimal burden to demonstrate, you know, the safety of the chemical up front. But then it's up to the people who are exposed to really have the burden to prove it's causing them harm before, you know, before there really anything much can be done about it. In Europe, There's a slightly different system where, it, again, I'm oversimplifying, but it follows more of what they call the precautionary principle, where you take action to stop harm as soon as there's any indication that it might be happening. You don't wait until there's absolute 100% unequivocal proof that it's making people sick or killing people before you do something. If you see indications that it's likely to cause a problem, you take action before the harm occurs. So there are a lot of efforts underway to try to require more information to be provided up front. But it's just a very difficult process here in the United States.
Yeah, that the European model makes much more sense. Like that, if there's any, I mean, personally, I'd like to have the burden on the chemical companies who, you know, there's only a handful of chemical companies that kind of control everything. So it's not like they can't afford to do the research and have them prove that it's safe prior to, you know, being able to use it. But even if the second best thing is probably the European model, where it's like if there's any questions about the chemical, any indication that it could be harmful to somebody, then pump the brakes and let's do some research and find out if it's actually having some negative effects on people. I think that makes much more sense.
Yeah, and I think unfortunately, though, if, I think if you ask folks that are working within the European model, they may say, well, that, you know, that's the goal and the objective of the way their system's supposed to work. Unfortunately, I think it doesn't always necessarily work that way over there either. But, that's sort of the competing philosophies. Both systems are really trying to require information to be brought out up front before these new chemicals come out onto the market. And in that regard, the U.S. system, again, has been beefed up, for new chemicals. The concern is, again, the focus has been primarily upon new chemicals. And you've got these thousands and thousands of chemicals that are already out there that are sort of grandfathered in, if you will, that, we just happened to find out about PFOA by stumbling on it through this problem with cows in West Virginia. And it really begs the question of what else is also out there that we are still completely unaware of, that may be well known, within somebody's files, but that the rest of us simply don't know about because it's an older chemical that never went through these kinds of reviews.
Yeah, that's why we need attorneys like you. I know America's Lawyer, it's a show on RT with Mike Papatonio. I think he's in a documentary too that you referred to. The devil we know, people like him, Robert Kennedy Jr. I mean, all these people are so they're so needed and necessary because, like you said, it's just constantly new chemicals coming about, and you just feel like once you prove that one is unsafe and you can kind of do something about that, they've already, it's like the criminal is always ahead of the curve of the police officer, right? I mean, they're always finding new ways of kind of bypassing the system. And yeah, so I mean, it really is scary because it does make you just rethink everything you have in your house, everything you wear, everything you buy, and like what you mentioned, it's so important to the labeling, because they are so good at tricking people in with labels. I mean, with foods, with products, just the word natural is on everything. It's like, what the hell does that mean? It's natural. Like, what's natural about it? Is it organic? Is it not organic? Is there, it's like they understand that most people don't go and read the details. They don't read the fine prints. They're just going to pick it up and whatnot. So it is something that we have to constantly just keep informing ourselves and keeping up with this. But it is scary because they have a lot of influence, and there are huge corporations with a lot of influence. And so, to see yourself kind of battle them and not afraid to battle them is always a good thing. And your firm initially, did they have any doubts about you getting involved in this? Were they supportive? I mean, obviously, I know the answer to this because I've looked into your story. But people listening who might be curious, like, how was your firm? Were they supportive in all this?
Yeah, you know, I think part of the reason all of this information came out is because I was at the firm I was at. I think, you know, you see that in the movie, you see that in the book as well, you know, that you know, this was a decision that I don't know how many other firms would have made, you know, to take on this case, and not only take on the case, but through its several different iterations, you know, starting off as a case for an individual family that then morphed into a large class action for tens of thousands of people, and then became, you know, a case involving thousands of injury claims and something that now spans contamination across the entire country. So, you know, I think I was fortunate to be where I'm at. And, you know, you raise a good point. You know, as a lawyer, obviously I'm talking about, you know, the case against DuPont, and, you know, also with 3M, not any other companies here. But, you know, it's incredibly important to have been at the firm I was at that particular point in time. You know, a lot of this happened during a massive economic meltdown during the 2009-10 timeframe, while we're waiting for the science to develop. And, you know, it was important to have that support. And you see that, you know, I think, in the film, and I try to address that in the book as well. You mentioned, you mentioned some of my co-counsel, Mike Papantonio, you know, who has the show on RT. You mentioned he was one of our lead trial lawyers in the trials. You know, we're able to get the verdicts against DuPont, and Bobby Kennedy Jr. was also, you know, on our trial team. So, you know, I have to thank all of those folks, not only the lawyers, but the folks in these communities who you know, were able to stand up and take it on and take these cases to trial and get this information out, so that the rest of us all know now what we're being exposed to.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Robert Kennedy gets a lot of pushback now because he's so open about his battle with some of the vaccines and stuff like that. But he has a long history of environmental justice and really, you know, done great work before he's kind of been the face of the vaccine movement. So thanks a lot, Robert. I think that you know, it's a compelling story. I love the fact there's a documentary, there's a movie, there's a book. So whatever type of entertainment people prefer, there's a way of consuming this information. And I think your movie is available on Amazon, right? Amazon Prime for the time being?
I believe so, yes.
And do you have, yeah. So Amazon Prime, check it out. You can Google it. I'm sure you can get it on Google Play or I think YouTube or anywhere else you can rent films. And then your book, website, anything else you want to promote?
No, you know, all of this, the movie, the documentary, the film, you know, it's just incredibly encouraging to see that information out there. You know, I really wanted to find ways to get this story out to the public. You know, again, I consider this to be a public health threat that's gone unnoticed for years. So, you know, to have the folks at Participant, Mark Ruffalo, Todd Haynes, everybody involved with the film, you know, they did a fantastic job in putting the story together in a way that I hope people really find informative and inspiring, you know, to see that one person like Wilbur Tennant or Joe Kiger, you know, and that you'll see in the film, you know, can stand up and take on a big company like this and speak out and, you know, see that something is wrong and it needs to be fixed and it can be done. It might take a long time, you know, it might be difficult, but it can be done. You know, so to have that film, I think, is incredibly important, you know, to help get that story out. The same reason I did the book, you know, to try to get this information available to people, you know, so they can see what really happened. If they're interested in the truth about what we know, what we really know, what was known, how this really happened, you know, they can find it in the book. And, you know, the documentary, which is also out there on Netflix, you know, I think is incredibly important for people to see how this story, you know, it's not just a legal scientific story here. This is something that impacted real people, real communities, and you can see those real people in the documentary. A lot of them were in the film as well. But, you know, hopefully all of it helps to inspire people to know they can stand up, they can speak out, And, you know, if there's a problem in the way our systems work, we can fix it.
Well, another thing, and I forgot to mention it, was DuPont's response to the film. Like, they're basically saying it was kind of just overblown, or there's some stuff that was inconsistent with the truth. What do you have to say about that? About their response to the film, and for people who might be listening and maybe watch the film and think, well, this might have been maybe more Hollywood than truth or whatnot. How close to the actual story is the film?
Well, I think they did a fantastic job in taking, you know, a story that spans 20 years, that's incredibly complex from a legal basis, a scientific basis, a personal basis, frankly, you know, involving not just, you know, our family, but the Tennant family, the folks within the law firm, the Kigers, you know, a lot of the Baileys, a lot of people. They did a great job in presenting those stories. And anybody has questions about what the truth is, again, the book's there, the documentary's there, film's there. You know, I think the truth is very obvious as to where the truth lies here. And it's hopefully now people can see it and find it for themselves.
Do you think, now, I know I said I was going to let you go, but these questions just popped in my head at the moment. But do you think, like, how has this affected your outlook, your perspective on all industries, not just like, you know, the DuPont, but like Monsanto, pharmaceutical companies, like, because all these industries have something in common. They all have a profit motive, which is usually the reason why a lot of this stuff happens. Do you look at all industries now differently?
You know, one of the reasons our firm even agreed to take this case on is because, you know, this particular case was just way off the charts in bad behavior, frankly. You know, this was really extreme behavior. Some, the kind of thing, frankly, I had not seen, you know, when working with any of the corporate clients I'd worked with before. My partners hadn't seen this kind of thing. I mean, this was, I'm hoping, you know, a case that is not often repeated in other industries and other companies. And again, hopefully by getting this story out and for people to see what happened here, we can help make sure it doesn't happen in other industries, other companies.
Yeah. Let's hope so. But like I said, they all have that profit motive. And when you have, you know, suits and ties who are just figuring out, you know, what's the best way of getting those quarterly gains and constantly growing and making more money, sometimes they don't look at the long-term effects. Sometimes they don't look at, you know, the people that they're hurting and what might happen, you know, or who it might negatively impact. And I think that's the scary part, is that, you know, too often, you know, money trumps morals in many cases.
Well, again, in the book Exposure, I really try to explain how it happened here. You know, what were the forces that created the problem with PFAS chemicals? You know, and how did this particular situation arise? Because again, you know, the hope is by highlighting that and by explaining the history and the dynamics that were in place, we can see how a problem like this happens and what can be done to make sure it doesn't get repeated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Robert. I really, really appreciate your time. I love hearing stories like this, like I said, and regardless if people are in the books, documentaries, films, watch it. I mean, this film is a really good film. I mean, like, my wife's not into documentaries or whatnot, so anytime I can find a movie that I can learn something and also entertain my wife for a little bit, it's awesome. And to see the great cast, and how, because even if it wasn't a true story, a film, if it was just a film, it's still compelling, and it's still a great acting, great storyline, great everything. So definitely worth watching. And hopefully you're staying safe and sane during all this. Are you working still, or are you basically just quarantined for the time being?
Working from home, where I think most of us are doing at this point is trying to get what I can get done from the house.
Yeah. Well, Well, great, great. At least you're healthy and sane.
Yeah.
But thank you, Robert. Stay safe, stay sane, and I'll send you the links once the show's up and live, and I'll also put links to your movie, your book, your I'll throw the documentary links in there too, and all that stuff, and any other links that you might wanna share with the listeners. You know, just send them to me, and we'll keep in touch. Keep up the great work, Robert. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
All right. Bye.